Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So here's the policy debate, folks, that has broken out of the corruption scandal that touched the mayoral race and City Councilman Dan Halloran last week. Halloran allegedly promised $80,000 in discretionary funds, those that each council member gets for his district, discretionary funds, to an FBI agent's fake real estate company in exchange for donations to his 2012 congressional campaign. Taxpayer dollars to bribe someone to contribute to his private campaign war chest. That's the allegation. So this has renewed a debate over whether discretionary funds are just too vulnerable to corruption and should be abolished. Bill de Blasio has taken that position in the mayoral race. Or whether discretionary funds serve important neighborhood purposes and just need to be watched more carefully. Christine Quinn has taken that position. So let's ask another leading mayoral hopeful about that and some other things. Former New York City Comptroller and the 2009 Democratic nominee, Bill Thompson. Comptroller Thompson, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's good to be back.
Okay. On discretionary funds for each council member, mend them or end them?
It's kind of a mend them at this point. I think that it is hard to make decisions for the entire city, and particularly some of the smaller community-based organizations in the neighborhoods across the city from one central location. So, you know, I think that the council people should be involved in making recommendations. At the same point, I think that what you should see is a baseline for each district, because what we also have seen is the speaker punishing members of the city council for not following her lead, political retribution in ways, and being able to take those dollars away from constituents. So I think we need to provide a lot of transparency, because it's clear if Councilman Halloran was talking about manipulating money, then what Speaker Quinn was supposed to have done in straightening this out has not occurred. So I think you want to see a couple of things. You want to see a baseline in each district. I think you'd like to start to see things a bit more need-driven, so that additional discretionary dollars go to the places that really need the money. And then I think that what you'd like to do is to make sure on the transparency level that there is huge transparency in every dollar that is spent, because it's clear that's not happening there.
Is there not transparency? How is a city council member responsible? When you say need-driven, who decides whether a particular nonprofit or whatever in a council person's district represents sufficient need?
You know, I think you can use a number of different indicators to start to use and focus on need. So I think that is one of the things, and one of the things that should be factored in. But a certain baseline for each district first, maybe not driven by need, and then additional dollars, additional discretionary dollars driven by need. I think those together make sense. And it also, what it prevents is it prevents the speaker from using dollars on a political basis, as Speaker Quinn has done. I think that what it does is creates more transparency. And as you're looking at some of the council people who are using participatory budgeting.
Yeah, we had two of those council members on Friday, Mark Favorito and Lander, and that sounds like it's democracy in action.
Absolutely.
And they don't want to cut off all discretionary funds because they couldn't do voting in the district experiments like that.
And, you know, I think as you look at Melissa Mark Viverito, you look at Councilman Lander, you look at Jumaane Williams and others who are doing this, people are getting involved. And what you're starting to see is people starting to believe in those areas a little bit more in government again.
But if you're going to make the charge that Quinn has used discretionary funds politically, back that up. What examples are you going to give?
Peter Vallone, who in fact said that because he didn't vote for the Queensboro for the Ed Koch Bridge name change, that he was punished for it. Councilwoman Crowley in Queens, because a press release went out that didn't have the speaker's name on it, she was punished also, and she was shortchanged, or her constituents, not her. Her constituents were shortchanged in discretionary dollars. We've got to be able to prevent those situations. And I think, you know, in making an allegation that Speaker Quinn has used it in retaliation, that's not my allegation. Those are the allegations of members of the city council.
Of those council members you cite, that's accurate. And Quinn denies it and says there were other reasons for those cuts, and we'll get her version the next time she's on. But by that measure, what about the assembly? The cover of the Post today, I'm holding this up. Have you seen this yet? Shell shock. That's Shell as in Shelley Silver. Gov's corruption fix, dump Speaker Silver. And the parallel to Christine Quinn is, if you argue that about Quinn as leader being responsible for some of the corruption leaking through, is it true of Silver too?
you know, I think that there is the situation on the state level really isn't tying into discretionary funds. It is tied into a number of other things. And, you know, obviously on any level of government, having corruption is bad for everyone. It is bad for government and everybody who wants to participate in that government. So, you know, I'm not going to point a finger at Shelley Silver as opposed to Christine Quinn. At this point, we're looking at discretionary funds, and that's the focus. And because it's on the front page of the Post doesn't necessarily mean it's so.
I'm shocked to hear you say that. WNYC with former New York City Comptroller and mayoral hopeful Bill Thompson. Another mend it or end it issue on stop and frisk. I want to air just 20 seconds of a response you gave in one of the recent mayoral forums, and we played this last week, an exchange between you and John Liu that ended one of the recent forums. Liu called for the abolition of stop and frisk as it's practiced altogether. Then you come in and you include crime in the equation. And listeners, this is a little bit off mic. Ozzie Paber from Capital New York was recording it from the audience, but listen carefully, Thompson referring to his teenage stepson, who is black and could well be subject to stop and frisk without having done anything. Liu said he'd abolish it.
I'm the one who has to worry about my son being stop and frisk. I'm concerned about my son also being shot by somebody who's a member of a gang in the streets. And at the same point, I don't have to sacrifice his constitutional rights to make sure he is safe. I don't have to sacrifice. I can have them both.
Don't have to sacrifice. I can have them both. I think that took so much, you know, attention, attracted so much attention, partly because progressive Democrats don't like to talk about fighting crime. They like to talk much more about fighting police excess. So can you expand on your position?
Well, the first thing I think that, you know, in a number of the forums that we've been in and talking about crime and talking about safety, I've pointed out that the reduction in crime and the increase in public safety has changed the city in my lifetime unlike almost any other thing. And it has changed neighborhoods across the city of New York and the perception of New York City. At the same point, stop and frisk is a useful policing tool that has been misused and abused by a Bloomberg-Kelly administration. It is as simple as that. When you go from in 2002, almost 100,000 stop and frisks, to 2011, almost 700,000 stop and frisks, and there is no correlation in, you know, reductions in shootings as well as in guns that are being taken off the streets, there's something wrong. And when I have to explain, and what I had spoken about and what, you know, Comptroller Liu had mentioned, yes, I've spoken or mentioned at a few of the forums, having to have a conversation with my stepson, you know, 2 years ago about what to do if he's stopped by the police. And the question that he had asked was, well, if I'm not doing anything wrong, why would I be stopped? And that is the legitimate question. At the same point, you want to make sure that the police department has, you know, or that officers have every tool that they need to keep crime down. What I was pointing out is we don't have to give up constitutional safeguards that we're entitled to be able to keep the city safe. You can have stop and frisk used correctly and at the same point not give up our constitutional safeguards.
So what is correctly? What actually changes in the way that officers on the street carry this out in your reform?
Number one, it is being used the way it was designed. I mean, part of it is part of what is occurring right now, whether they're performance indicators, they are being tied to the number of stop and frisk. So how many stops or how many stops are done in a precinct? All of that is looked at as kind of productivity measures. That's not the way it's supposed to be. It is where there's the legitimate concern and a police officer believes that someone has engaged in or has a weapon and other. That's when a stop is done. It is not done to be able to hit certain numbers and certain indicators. That's where it's being misused. And what we've seen across the city of New York, police officers that I've spoken to have said that, you know something, they dislike the way that they're being pushed right now. As one officer described it, there's an art to being a police officer. They're removing his discretion. They're removing and stopping the art of being a police officer. That's what, you know, through training, through a police commissioner who lets people understand he's not going to tolerate people being stopped just because of what they look like and who they are. That's the way you bring about real change. And the way stop and frisk is being used then is the correct way, and we keep the city safe.
Mayor hopeful Bill Thompson with us for just another couple of minutes here on WNYC as we continue to have one-on-one conversations with all the mayoral hopefuls and rotating people through, and we'll keep doing that all year till people drop out or the primary in September, which I guess we know now is going to be in September and not in June. That's settled.
That is off the table. It's September 10th.
One other thing. A profile of you that Chris Smith had in New York Magazine the other week, and it was largely about race, and he laid out a scenario where a racially calm period in New York City in historic terms is making this a less salient issue this year than it's been in our lifetimes. But also, you as the only black candidate, in addition to your 8 years as comptroller, combining those, you know, personal and professional experiences, trying to appeal to Latinos on a somewhat ethnic basis, how would you describe the importance, if any, of you as an African American in this year's electoral field?
Well, I think that, you know, being African American, it is not I don't think I've ever walked into an audience, an African American audience, Caribbean American audience, and said, vote for me because I'm black. I've, you know, vote for me because I'm the best candidate. Vote for me because I'm the best qualified candidate. At the same point, you know, being black growing up in the city of New York has helped to shape who I am. You know, it is an understanding of what happens in some neighborhoods, of you know, aspirations and goals of people in different neighborhoods. So it increases my understanding, but that's, I've never walked around and said, that's the reason to vote for me. It is the same thing when you talk about Latino communities. It is having worked together over a period of decades on different issues, from education to crime to job creation. That's why I've said to people, vote for me, not because, you know, because I'm black, I have a unique understanding. It's because of the relationships and the things I've done through most of my life.
All right. One politics question out of left field, sort of. Politico reported this weekend that Anthony Weiner could jump into one or another of the citywide races soon. Assuming he's not going to run for mayor, is a comeback now appropriate, in your opinion, as a potential controller, your old job, or public advocate?
See, that is the one, as you said, from left field. I'm going to kind of take a pass on that one. And
that's not a political judgment.
No, but it is a judgment. It becomes up to the people of the city. Do they feel, you know, and Anthony, I'm sure if he decides to run for anything, he'll speak to the people of the city of New York and indicate why he's running and indicate, you know, past issues and speak to that. What do the people of the city of New York say? And the one thing about him, in a lot of ways, they are very forgiving. And that's the one thing that makes New York City such a great place.
All right. I will see you on Wednesday at the Furman Center Mayoral Forum on Affordable Housing, which I'm moderating, and then again on Earth Day, April 22nd, at the League of Conservation Voters Forum. You guys are like a traveling roadshow at this point. You know, how many a week of these forums do you do?
Oh, at least five, it seems, if not more. But the one thing, if you're attending this many, and you've already been, you already moderated one, this will bring it up to three.
That's right.
I'm waiting for your announcement to say that you're jumping in the race for mayor, because you have done as many of these forums as a few other people have done.
If nominated, I will not run, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But why is this the way? I don't know. Maybe we need a different word for it. It sounds so boring to say forum. And I don't know what you replace it with. You know, colloquium wouldn't draw the public's attention.
No, but forums, and the public understands. And the one thing that it has done, if you look at a number of the forums, they're well attended. You know, you're looking at the one that you moderated. It was very well attended. There are others that have drawn across the city, hundreds of people, you know, 400, 500 people, 300 people. It shows that people want to be involved and want to be informed, and realizing 2013 is a year of not just decision, but a year of direction for the city of New
York. Indeed, and I'm already told there are going to be 900 people at the Great Hall for the conservation one, and
exactly,
hundreds on Wednesday for the affordable housing one. So I will see you there. And listeners, how about this? If you want us to consider replacing the word forum, at least for the ones I'm moderating, tweet at Brian Lehrer. If you have a better word, I'll actually use it on stage there on Wednesday evening. And Bill Thompson, former controller, mayoral candidate, we'll keep talking. Thank you very much.
Great seeing you, Brian. See you Wednesday.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, former Foreign Policy magazine editor Moises Naim on his new book, The End of Power, why he sees micropowers challenging, tearing down the big old institutions, and why that's both good and bad. And we'll get a word from him on the passing of Margaret Thatcher. Stay with us.